This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
This is Tailgate Till May, part of the Believe Podcast Network. If you love college sports and you like to have a little action on the games, then this is the place for you, because I'm your host, Stephen Gorgi, and I love both of those things too. Today is Tuesday, June 11th, 2024, and I have a packed show for you today. I'm going to talk a little bit about the upcoming College World Series. Got a couple bets I'm putting down. It's been a fun tournament so far, and I can't wait till Omaha. I'm also going to continue with my college basketball check-in series. Today, we'll be checking in on what I think is one of the top two leagues in all of college basketball, the SEC. And I also have a college football future that I'm putting down that I want to share with you all as we continue the march towards football season. But first, let's start with the big news in the world of college sports, and that is Dan Hurley will return to UConn as their head coach. He will not go out to LA to coach the Lakers. He will remain at UConn. And I just want to congratulate everyone out there, because that means college basketball isn't dead after all. I was told on Friday by various people on Twitter, by various people out there on the internet, that this was a sad state of affairs for college basketball, that one of the best coaches in the game dared think about leave the sport for the NBA. Nobody's ever thought about that before. It just shows how far college basketball has fallen. It shows the state of the game right now that Dan Hurley would think about going to coach the Los Angeles Lakers. It's not like Coach K did this 20 years before and ultimately stayed at Duke. It's not like Billy Donovan left Florida to go and coach in the NBA. It's not like I ran through a whole list of college football coaches from Bill Walsh to Jimmy Johnson who went and did this on the football side, went from college football to the NFL, going all the way back to the late 70s, early 80s. No, I was told this is just the end of college basketball. It's something that it might just not be able to recover from. And of course, I say all that tongue-in-cheek, because there were a lot of stories like that, a lot of opinions out there that this just shows if a guy like Dan Hurley wants to go and coach the Lakers, this just shows the state of college basketball. It's a dying product. People don't want to be a part of it. It's chaos. And you know what? To some extent, I'll buy into it's a tough time to be a college basketball coach right now. You don't know the rules. I think everybody would like to know the rules, get some clarity, get some stability in the sport. I'll buy that to some extent. But I talked about it on Friday. This is just the normal course of things. Top college coaches have always been pursued by those at the professional ranks. Whether it be the NBA, the NFL, we've seen it in hockey and the NHL even, the top college coaches are always going to be pursued by the professional franchises. That's just the way it goes. And whether Dan Hurley left or stayed, college basketball was going to be okay. Now, would I prefer to have Dan Hurley in the sport, in the college ranks? Absolutely. It's certainly good that he's staying. It's good for the sport of college basketball, but college basketball was going to survive and go on and play games, and I was going to watch those games, and I was going to bet on those games, and so were you, and we were all going to enjoy it, whether Dan Hurley decided he was going to come back to stores or he was going to go out to LA and coach LeBron and the Lakers. So I'm not going to sit here today and act like this is the biggest win in the world for college basketball, because I was I was rolling my eyes so much on Friday, and you heard it here on this show, about this notion that this was going to be the end of college basketball, or just shows It was illustrating the state of the game if he were to leave. Now, I never bought that for a second, so I'm not going to sit here and proclaim this is the biggest win for college basketball and college basketball is back on. But of course, it is a huge win for UConn because now the chase is back on for the Huskies. UConn can seriously think once again about going for back-to-back-to-back titles. They were the first team to go back-to-back since Florida and Billy Donovan did it in, 2006, 2007. And I do believe they would be the first team to go for three straight since UCLA sometime in the 70s. Let's look here. Let's just make sure I'm not missing anybody. So we had Florida that went back-to-back in 06, 07. Before that, we had Duke in 91, 92 go back-to-back. And before that, you have to go all the way back to this incredible run from 1967 to 1973. When UCLA won 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 straight championships. And it's pretty amazing that in college football and college basketball in the last 2 years, we'll have teams going for a three-peat. We had Georgia, who was really oh so close to going for that three-peat a season ago. I mean, who's to say if Georgia got in that college ball playoff, if they had been able to get over the hump against Alabama, and get over the hump isn't the right word there because they've gotten over that Alabama hump in a national championship game before. If they had just been able to beat Alabama last year, they would have gotten a chance in the college ball playoff. And they were, if Georgia wasn't a top four team last year, they were a top five team last year. Georgia was very, very close to completing that three-peat, and that would have been the first three-peat since Minnesota, I think right around World War II or maybe before World War II. Minnesota's national championships were 1934, 1935, 1936. So even 40 years or so before UCLA's incredible run. But in back-to-back years, we're going to have a college football team and a college basketball team going for a three-peat. So UConn is the huge winner here because they were waiting for a while, although they won that national championship with Kevin Ollie, they were waiting for a while for somebody to really take over that throne from Jim Calhoun, and Dan Hurley clearly seems to be that guy. And now Dan Hurley has a lot of front of him in terms of, you know, what he can accomplish in his career at UConn, the rarefied air he can elevate himself to. I mean, he is already there in some ways by winning those back-to-back titles, but if he sticks around, if he really commits to UConn, he can be, like I've been calling him, the modern-day Coach K. He has that ability. He has that potential if he sticks around and continues building this program and succeeding at the level he has. And I think as a result of this whole thing, as a result of him deciding to come back to Storrs, not go and coach the Lakers, I already thought Dan Hurley was the face of college basketball. I talked about it during the season. I said, hey, if you're a UConn fan, you love him. If you're a rival fan, you probably hate him. He's a big character. He has a big personality, and he's winning at an unbelievable clip, and that's kind of what you need. Sports needs villains, and I think Dan Hurley is absolutely a villain if you're a Villanova fan, if you're a North Carolina fan, if you're anybody that UConn has beaten, which is everybody over the past couple of seasons. Dan Hurley is probably a villain to you if you're a fan of a team that's also striving for a national championship. And I think college sports needs that. If you're a UConn fan, he's the best. You love him. Nobody's better. It's very similar to Mike Krzyzewski and Duke for all those years. And I think as a result of all of this, he has a bigger spotlight on him with the casual sports fan, because for somebody who may not watch a ton of college hoops, they will know, oh, Dan Hurley is the guy the Lakers were going after. And I think he gets that bigger spotlight, and he's solidified now kind of going forward as the face of college basketball. So I think that accelerates. I think this whole flirtation with the Lakers solidifies Dan Hurley as the face of college basketball going forward, especially if he wins. So ultimately, this is a good thing. Dan Hurley deciding to come back is a great thing for UConn. I think it's a good thing for college basketball. I don't think it saved college basketball or anything. It was going to be fine. It wasn't going anywhere, but it was certainly a good thing. You want big names in your sport. You want people that fans can latch on to in your sport, whether it's because they love them or hate them. And then I think this solidifies Dan Hurley as the face of the sport moving forward, which I think is also a good thing for the sport of college basketball, again, to have somebody that fans can latch on to for good or bad. So Dan Hurley decides to stay at UConn. He will be the head coach in Storrs next year, and UConn will be going for their third straight national title. Now, eight other teams are going for national titles later this week in Omaha, Nebraska. It's the College World Series, and it's an all-SEC-ACC affair. It's the SEC-ACC Invitational in Omaha this year. We have four teams from the ACC. We have Virginia, North Carolina, Florida State, and NC State. NC State, the last team to punch their ticket, beating Georgia in Athens a night ago. And then from the SEC, we have the top overall seed, Tennessee. We have Kentucky. We have Florida. And we have Texas A&M. And on the one hand, when I look at this all-ACC-SEC College World Series, it disappoints me in some ways because you're looking at two conferences entirely in one region of the country. And I think some of the beauty of college sports is that it is a regional, college sports are regional, but then they come together to become a national sport. And in years past, we've had teams like Oregon State in the College World Series and a lot of West Coast teams. Those West Coast teams are not there this year. Oregon State knocked out in the Super Regional. Oregon knocked out in the Super Regional. So, you know, I do find it more interesting when we have a little bit more diversity in the region. And, you know, it makes sense, right? Baseball is huge in the Southeast. These are programs that have huge budgets. There's a ton of talent. They have the resources to attract that talent. It all makes sense. If I was a top-tier baseball player, I would want to go play in the SEC too. But as a fan of a program that was in the ACC, struggled mightily during its time in the ACC, and really found most of its success in the Big Ten, I do wonder if maybe the addition of USC and UCLA and Oregon to the Big Ten might be something that can help push Big Ten baseball forward a little bit moving forward. Because, you know, the weather will always be a factor. The weather will always be a factor for a sport that starts in February. There's no two ways around that. But you just look around at the atmosphere at these super regionals over the weekend, whether it was Athens, whether it was College Station, whether it was Chapel Hill, Clemson, South Carolina, Kentucky punching their first ever ticket to a College World Series, the atmosphere there in Lexington, it was unreal. And it's something that you would just like, I would like more fan bases to get to experience. I didn't get a chance to go to Maryland's regional that they hosted a couple years ago, unfortunately. I was living out of the area at the time. But anybody you talk to says it was incredible. It was something different than that they had experienced. And Maryland's hosted its fair share of big games in college basketball over the years. Don't get me wrong. But still, it was something different. And I think it's just something that I would like more fan bases, more people, more teams to experience outside of the Southeast. But the fact of the matter is, those are the best programs. Those are the programs that have invested in the sport. They are the best teams, and they deserve to be there. So on the other hand, I look at it and I say, what an unbelievable College World Series that we're going to have. Because you'll look at who's there. Okay, Tennessee, the number one overall seed. Florida State was a one seed. And the way college baseball works, if you're not familiar with it, there's 16 seeded teams. They host the regional round, which is the first round. And those are the teams. The top eight are the teams expected to get to the College World Series. The top 16 are the teams expected to get to the Super Regional round, which is the round of 16. But you'll look at it. So one seeds are those top 16 seeds. And Tennessee was a one seed. They were the number one overall seed. They're in it. Florida State was a one seed. They're in it. Virginia, a one seed. They're in it. North Carolina, a one seed. They're in it. That's it. That entire bracket, and the College World Series is split into two 4-team brackets. That's all one seeds in that region. Then you have Kentucky was a one seed. They advanced. NC State was a one seed. They advanced, and they had to go on the road to Athens in the Super Regional round to get it done, but they were expected to get to a Super Regional, and now they're in the College World Series. You have Texas A&M. They are a one seed. They advance. The only team out of those eight that is not a one seed that is there is Florida. Florida was a three seed, but Florida is a team that was in the championship series against LSU a year ago. So we have the cream of the crop headed to Omaha. We have big time fan bases, big time programs, big time talent, and excellent baseball teams. And it's going to be an exciting series. I can't wait for it to get started. Things kick off on Friday afternoon. North Carolina and Virginia, the first game. Tennessee and Florida State, the second game. And this thing goes on for a while. It starts June 14th, Friday, June 14th. The championship series will end possibly, if there's a game three, Monday, June 24th. So we have like 10 days here of baseball awesomeness. I'm really excited for it. And I've been betting these super regionals a little bit to varying degrees of success. Think let's see, 3-4 here over 7 super regional bets, down just under a half unit, down 0.39 units. So, you know, hanging in there just a little under even on these college baseball bets here. You know, it's not a sport that I watch year-round. It's a sport that I really get more into in the postseason, but starting to get a little bit of a feel for it here. And I got a couple College World Series bets that I put down. You know, 8 teams left, and in a sport like baseball, as good as Tennessee has been, and they have been very, very good, they are the favorite right now to win this thing. They are plus 250 to win it on BetMGM right now. I like taking a shot with some underdogs here because, again, it is baseball. Anything can happen. This format of the College World Series can get really wonky. You can end up going deep into your rotation, deep into your bullpen, looking for arms. So I got a couple futures here on the College World Series. I got Florida, the only non-one seed in the tournament. Last year's runner-up, a half unit on them at 16-1 to win it all because they have star power in Jack Caglione. If you don't know about Jack Caglione, he's a guy who hits for a ton of power. He also pitches. He's kind of college baseball's version of Shohei Ohtani. He's got the nickname Jack Tani, and he's hit 33 homers in back-to-back years. And Florida is a team that, a very talented team. Got off to a decent start this year, struggled at times over the course of the SEC season, and there's a rule in college baseball that you have to be one game over 500 overall to get a bid into the NCAA tournament. And Florida went into their final series of the season against a rival on the road in Athens against Georgia, a team that would end up going to the Super Regional, a team that was the number 8 overall seed, the last so basically they were expected to go to the College World Series, and Florida took 2 out of 3 before the SEC tournament to basically assure that they would finish one game or more above 500. They got in. They were not the last team in, as many expected. They were not the last team in, but they got an at-large bid. Of course, they were a 3 seed, as I've mentioned, and they have been on a tear. They went down to Stillwater, very good baseball program at Oklahoma State, and they won that Stillwater Regional. Then they went on the road to Clemson, which has an unbelievable baseball environment, and they swept Clemson. They have, like I said, star power in Caglione. They also have a guy at the end of their bullpen in Brandon Neely, who is pitching as well as anybody in the country, and that is a huge luxury to have. In game one against Clemson, he went 4 innings, struck out 7, walked 1, allowed just 1 hit as he closed out a 10-7 Florida win in game one on the road in a super regional, a big time performance from him. And we've seen teams like Florida in the past that have a lot of talent, takes a little bit of time to put it together, and ultimately go on and win the whole thing. And most recently, the easiest parallel here is 2002. Ole Miss was the last team in the tournament, and they went and they won the national championship. Florida is playing with a ton of confidence right now. They have the star power in Caglione. They have a guy at the back end of the bullpen, which is huge. They have a solid lineup, and they believe they can do it. They were also here last year, and they have some younger guys, but they also have guys like Caglione who were here, who have that experience, who know what it's like to play and win in Omaha, and then also fall in Omaha in that championship series. So for all those reasons, I think it's worth it. It was worth it for me to invest just a little bit, a half unit on Florida 16-1 to win the national championship. Now, the other team I like here is North Carolina at +750. And North Carolina and Florida are on opposite sides of the bracket. So the way this whole format works, it's 2 4-team brackets. They kind of play it. They play double elimination within that 4-team bracket. And then the winner of each of those 4-team brackets meet in a championship series, best 2 out of 3. So it is possible that we could get a North Carolina-Florida championship series. And oh, how beautiful that would be for me, who is taking North Carolina at +750 to win it all. North Carolina, in their regional, played a team and fought off a team in LSU that was playing as well as anybody in the country, that was as talented as anybody in the country. LSU was the defending national champion. They lost a ton from last year's team, but they had really figured it out down the stretch into the SEC tournament and into the NCAA tournament. And they went to a winner-take-all game in the regional. North Carolina found a way to get it done. It was as tense of a baseball game as I have ever watched. And North Carolina is a team that is hitting walk-offs, that, like Florida, believes in itself right now and is just finding a way to win. Now, they also have a tremendous amount of star power in a guy named Vance Honeycutt. And the first time that I heard of Vance Honeycutt was maybe 2 seasons ago. I was watching the ACC tournament, and he came up with a big hit. I can't remember if it was a walk-off. I can't remember what it was. It was either a walk-off or just a really big hit at a really important time. And that was when he was a freshman in 2022. And he was a freshman All-American that year. And he is a guy that anytime I have ever watched him play, he comes up big. Anytime you hear somebody talk about Vance Honeycutt, the outfielder from Salisbury, North Carolina, they talk about how he is the best player on the field anytime he is on the field. For a very similar reason to why I'm taking Florida, I'm going to take North Carolina here at +750. They got the star power in Honeycutt, and I feel like they are a team that believes in itself and is finding a way to win right now at the most important time. There's one more team that I like, but I'm not betting, and that's Kentucky at +550 to win it all. Kentucky is making their first trip to the College World Series, And I think that's the reason I'm going to stay away from them. Because I do think winning the College World Series, you kind of have to make incremental progress, right? Nick Mingione has done an unreal job at Kentucky. Kentucky is turning into a baseball school. But I think you got to get to Omaha. You got to experience Omaha before you can win in Omaha. The thing that's interesting about Kentucky is the field there in Omaha. It's a big ballpark. It's as big a ballpark, if not bigger, than these teams playing all year. So you got to manufacture runs, and that's something Kentucky can do very well. It's a reason that they're intriguing, but I'm staying away from them. They have the third lowest odds to win. It's Tennessee at plus 250, A&M at plus 300, Kentucky at plus 550. I like the fact that they can manufacture runs. I don't like the fact they haven't been here before. So I'm going with Carolina, North Carolina, plus 750. Florida, 16-1, a half unit on each. And let's hope they meet each other in that championship series, because what a fun championship series that would be. Okay, the SEC is dominating the world of college baseball right now, along with the ACC. But the SEC, I think, is also going to have an excellent year when it comes to basketball as well, as we look ahead to 2025. So let's take a quick break. And on the other side, we will do our June hoops check-in on the SEC.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
PC, let's check in on what's been going on in SEC basketball this offseason. I'm going to give you three teams I believe are trending up and three teams I think are trending down as we look ahead to the 2025 college basketball season. And the first two teams that are trending up are both in the state of Alabama. They are the Auburn Tigers and the Alabama Crimson Tide. The state of Alabama is starting to take over college basketball. I mean, you talk about the Iron Bowl. It's football, football, football. It's not a football-only rivalry anymore. These are two strong basketball programs that I think are on their way up in 2025. So let's start with Alabama. And you might be saying, hey, how can a team that went to a Final Four last year be on their way up? Where else can they go? How can they be going any higher? How can they be trending up when they went to a Final Four? Well, yes, it's true. Alabama did go to a Final Four last year, and they really put things together in March. But the whole ride wasn't necessarily the smoothest. They went 13-5 in the SEC. It was a four-way tie for second. They got a four seed. It was a good regular season, not a great regular season. They finished the year number 14 overall in KenPom, and they had a magical run to the Final Four. And when I say magical, I don't mean it in a I don't mean that as if it was a fluke. I mean they found the right formula in March, and they put it all together. And their game against North Carolina in the Sweet 16 was an extraordinarily impressive one. They played UConn about as well as anybody did throughout that whole tournament. So it was a good season for Alabama, but it was really defined by one thing to me. They had an awesome offense and a lackluster defense, and they got enough out of the defense in the tournament to make it work. But I never thought of them as a true national championship contender because of that defense. That defense finished number 111 in KenPom. They had the second best offense, the 111th best defense. And that was a kind of the story of the SEC as a whole last year, too. You had a lot of teams like that. You had Kentucky that was number seven offensively, 109 defensively. It was an offense heavy, fast tempo league that had some lackluster defenses. So the big question going into this year for Alabama is, can they improve that defense? And what they did in the offseason, I really like. Okay, let's start with what they brought back. They brought back their point guard, Mark Sears. And you all know I'm a huge fan of teams that bring back their backcourt, especially their point guard. And Mark Sears is a guy who, if it hadn't been for Dalton Knecht, he probably would have been the SEC player of the year. As it was, he was a first team all SEC guy, and he decided to come back. They also brought back two nearly seven footers in Jaren Stevenson and Grant Nelson. Nelson was the star of that North Carolina Sweet 16 game. You probably remember that glorious mustache. And they bring back Latrell Reitzel, who was about a 45% shooter from three a year ago. And then what they did from here, I think, really helps them when you look at what they brought in the transfer portal. They brought in Cliff Amori from Rutgers. I talked about their defense. That was their weak spot. Well, Amori is a great interior defensive big. He's going to allow Grant Nelson to play the four a little bit, and he's going to bring a rugged Big Ten style of play to the SEC. I think it's something that's really going to benefit Alabama in the year ahead and help them become a national championship contender. He's not the guy you're going to look to for offense, but that's okay. They have enough offense out there. What they need is a guy who's not going to worry about scoring, who's not going to worry about his points, how many touches, how many shots he's getting. They need a guy like Cliff Amori who's going to protect the rim, who's going to hit the glass, who's going to be a presence inside, and that's exactly what they got. Now, another big thing for Alabama last year was that they were an excellent three-point shooting team. Nate Oates' teams are always going to shoot a lot of threes, and last year they were top 20 in both three-point percentage and three-point rate. So what did they do? They went out and they got even more shooters. They bring in Chris Youngblood, a transfer from South Florida, and Houston Millett, a transfer from Pepperdine. Both those guys shot 40-plus percent from beyond the arc a season ago. They also went out and they got Aiden Holloway from Auburn, a guard from Auburn. He only shot 30% from deep, but he came into school with a reputation as a big-time shooter. He was just a freshman last year, and last year he had games where he was on fire from beyond the arc. He had a game against Indiana where he went 5 of 8 from 3, a game against Notre Dame where he went 4 of 5, and another against Georgia where he went 5 of 8. So they brought in even more shooting. They brought in a guy who is going to be defense first in Cliff Amori. And then when you look at what they brought in from a high school perspective, they brought in four recruits that are all in the top 50 in the 24/7 composite ratings. This is a team that's going to be versatile, that can play a bunch of lineups, and that I think is going to somehow be even better offensively while also getting better defensively. The goal for Alabama this year should truly be getting back to the Final Four and winning a national championship, and that's why I have them trending up. As for Auburn, Auburn was actually better in the computer ratings last year than Alabama was. They were also part of that four-way tie for second in the SEC. They got a four seed just like Alabama, but instead of making a big run to the Final Four, they lost to Yale in the first round, and it killed my survivor pool, something I desperately, desperately want to win. If there's one thing in gambling that I want to accomplish, it's to win an NCAA tournament survivor pool. Auburn didn't allow that to happen last year, but nevertheless, they were number four in KenPom. They finished the season number four in KenPom last year. Only Auburn and UConn finished in the top 10 in both offensive and defensive efficiency. That's it. The back-to-back champion, UConn, and Auburn. Those were the only two teams. So when you look at this, or when you compare them to Alabama, they didn't have the run in March, but from a computer perspective, they were a better team last year. I don't necessarily buy that. I think they were very close. My thing with Auburn last year was I felt like I didn't necessarily trust them away from home against other teams with top talent. For a while, it seemed like any team that they played that was as talented as them, that was away from home, away from Auburn, they struggled with, especially in January and February when they were in SEC play, dropping back-to-back games. I remember those back-to-back losses against Alabama and Mississippi State, but it was a very good season, good regular season for Auburn. Now, this year, I think they have a chance, again, to take it to another level. In the way too early Bart Torvik rankings, they are number 11. They're 30-1 to win the national championship per BetMGM. And I forgot to mention Alabama's national title odds. I think Alabama is somewhere around 12-1. Let me bring it up here. They are 12-1 on FanDuel, behind only UConn and Kansas, tied with Duke. So that's the expectation level for Alabama. Now, I feel like the expectation level should be right there for Auburn. In fact, I would probably, if I was betting it right now, if I was forced to choose, would you rather take Alabama at 12-1 or Auburn at 30-1? I would take Auburn at 30-1 because I think these two teams are relatively close. Auburn's definitely a little bit more of a well-balanced team. And when you look at their lineup for 2025, the biggest thing for them is that their center, Jahni Broom, who was first-team All-SEC, first-team All-Defense in the league last year, decided to come back for another season. And probably him and Mark Sears will be at the very top of that list as far as SEC preseason player of the year candidates are concerned. So they bring him back. That was the biggest news for Auburn in the offseason. If you want to look at the downside for Auburn, they do lose a couple guys, especially in the backcourt. Aiden Holloway, I mentioned, transferred to Alabama. And, you know, that's a big deal in the rivalry, right? And he was a guy that was important for them a year ago, as was Trey Donaldson, who transferred to Michigan. But what did they do? They went out and they got a guy in J.P. Pegues, a transfer from Furman, who is probably going to be their starting point guard this year. And you might remember him as the guy who hit the game-winning shot against Virginia for Furman 2 years ago in the NCAA tournament when Virginia inexplicably threw the ball away to Furman. So he's a big-time shot maker, but, you know, you never know how a new point guard is going to fit in. That's the one thing that would have me a little bit nervous, right? I do like the fact, if you're comparing Alabama and Auburn, that Alabama has Mark Sears coming back, who is a potential SEC Player of the Year candidate at point guard. Auburn has that, but just at center, in Jahni Broom. Now, like Alabama, Auburn has shooters galore. They bring back guys in Denver Jones and Chad Baker-Mazzara that were big time for them last year. I expect both of these teams to be competing for an SEC title this season. The Iron Bowl is not just for football. I think Auburn and Alabama both can make legitimate runs at the Final Four and maybe even a national championship in 2025. My third and final team that's trending up is Texas A&M. So a season ago, they went 9-9 in the league, tied for seventh. They got a 9 seed in the NCAA tournament. They had a wild second round game against Houston where they pushed them to the brink in overtime. Couldn't quite finish off the job, but it was overall a decent ending to an inconsistent up and down year for Houston. They finished the year number 35 in KenPom. The year before, in 2023, they got a 7 seed. They lost in the first round. I think it was to Penn State that season. And they finished number 33 in KenPom. So they've had 2 years that were about the same. And I would say last season, I thought they would take a little bit more of a step forward. They were one of my favorite teams to bet on in 2023, and they did lose to Penn State in the first round in 2023. They were one of my favorite teams to bet on. Wade Taylor is a guy at point guard who would just get to the free throw line at will. And last season, they were just a little bit more inconsistent. The offense was a little bit better, and they brought back Taylor and they brought back Boots Radford, but the defense was not quite as good. And looking ahead to the 2025 season, they bring back Wade Taylor, who was first team all SEC last year. They bring back Manny Obasike in their backcourt. They lose Boots Radford, who was a huge part of that team and a huge part of that their success over the past couple of seasons there. But you know what they did? They added a lot more shooting, because shooting has not been what a strength of Texas A&M under Buzz Williams. Last year, they shot under 30%. From beyond the three-point arc, and they bring in a guy in Zurich Phelps, a transfer from SMU, who's probably going to take that Boots Radford spot. He's not going to maybe be the best shooter, and Radford wasn't the best shooter. He shot about 28% from beyond the arc. He's more a guy who could get into the lane and score that way, and Phelps will probably play more of that role. But they bring in a guy in CJ Wilcher from Nebraska, who shot 39% off the bench from them from beyond the arc, and that should be something that helps them from beyond the arc. Now, defense was their big question, and they bring in a guy on the interior in Pharrell Payne, a transfer from Minnesota, who's going to be really effective on the offensive glass as well as a rim protector. And if you know anything about Buzz Williams basketball, if you ever watch A&M play, you know how important offensive rebounding is to him. So it's a guy who can accentuate their existing strength, but also help address some of that weakness on the defensive end in Pharrell Payne. So I like the way that A&M has brought back a ton. And again, I can't overestimate the importance of bringing back Wade Taylor. He's a guy who has been integral to their success over the past couple of years. He's a guy that gets to the free throw line, it feels like, at will. They bring back a bunch of other guys on the interior in Solomon Washington, Anderson Garcia. Garcia was a first team all defense in the league, Henry Coleman. And I think Washington, Payne, Garcia, and Henry Coleman form a very formidable front court there, a nice four-man rotation there that will really, I think their defense will be better this season, especially in the front court. A&M is tops in the SEC in returning minute percentage per Bart Torvik. I like how they improve their shooting by bringing in CJ Wilcher, and I think this is the year that the expectation for A&M needs to be a Sweet 16. You know, maybe looking more like they had got a 9 seed last year, a 7 seed the year before. Maybe it's more like a 4 seed this season, a seed that you can advance with to the Sweet 16, where you're expected to advance to the Sweet 16. So I like what Buzz Williams brought back. I like how he replaced Boots Radford, and I like how he improved the shooting and how I think he improved the team from a defensive perspective. Now, before we get to my three trending down, I want to address a couple teams that I'm sure you want me to talk about, you want to hear about, but I have no idea what to expect from these teams. And that's the teams that were so intertwined in the offseason, Arkansas and Kentucky. Of course, John Calipari leaves Kentucky to go to Arkansas. Kentucky hires Mark Pope, brings home the former Wildcat, who was the BYU head coach, a member of that 1996 Kentucky National Championship team. They bring him back to Lexington. So these teams are so intertwined. But these are teams that bring back almost nothing from a year ago. There's just one player for Arkansas, I believe, coming back, and that's Trayvon Brazil. And outside of that, it's going to be a completely new roster. It's going to be a bunch of guys that Calipari had recruited to Kentucky, like Boogie Flan, who's a freshman, top-rated freshman, who will go to Arkansas instead of Kentucky. It'll be some guys like Big Z, Zvonimir Ivicic, who actually went to Kentucky and then transferred to Arkansas. Big Z and DJ Wagner are two of those guys. They landed a big transfer in John L. Davis from FAU. You probably remember him from their Final Four run a couple years ago. So it's going to be an interesting roster, and I have no idea what to expect. The same thing goes for Kentucky. The roster is completely new. And they got some interesting pieces coming in among them. I mean, I could name them all. I just don't know how they're going to fit here. Like, Jackson Robinson is a guy who played for Pope at BYU last season, who I really liked. I enjoyed watching. Kirk Carissa is an interesting player who was at Arizona, went to West Virginia, was part of that season last year after Bob Huggins got fired and Josh Eilert took over as the interim head coach and made the best of a bad situation there. He's an interesting piece. Andrew Carr, a 7-footer or 6'11 guy from Wake Forest, who was a big part of that team, is transferring there. Otega Owe from Oklahoma is transferring in. I just don't know how all these pieces are going to fit together. I guess the way I would think about these teams is, like, I think they are going to be drastically different teams in February than they are in November. And probably from a gambling perspective, I'm going to look to fade them a little bit early in the season. And then as they get better, I'm going to be looking for signs that they are improving and are getting better. So I don't have them either as trending up or trending down, because I just have no idea what to expect from either one of those rosters this year. I'll guarantee this, they're going to be must-see TV. They're going to be interesting to watch because they are basically taking 17 guys and putting them together for the first time. I don't know why I said 17. There's only 13 scholarships in college basketball. So it's called 13 guys and putting them together for the first time. So it'll be interesting to see how they develop as the season goes on. Okay, my three trending down, and I'll hit these quickly here since we're going a bit long. The two newcomers for me to the league, Oklahoma and Texas, are teams that I feel like are trending down. At Oklahoma, Porter Moser enters his fourth year in Norman, and he has yet to make an NCAA tournament. A season ago, they went 8-10 in the Big 12, and over the course of his 3 years, they've gone number 30, number 54, number 46 in KenPom. They are very much a mid-tier power conference team right now, and they really need to find a way to break through. Now, in T-Rank, they are projected 65th right now in 2025, and in large part, it's because they lose a couple big players from last year's team in Milo Suzan, Otega Owe, and Javion McCollum. Now, not all the time is losing a transfer a bad thing, but you got Uzan, who's going to Houston. You got Owe, who's going to Kentucky. And then Javion McCollum is a guy who I really liked. It doesn't quite sound the same, but he's going to Georgia Tech. It's really the Houston and the Kentucky that stand out to me. It's like, you don't want to lose guys to programs like that. It's not typically a good sign. And now it seems like Porter Moser, once again, will be starting from basically scratch. And, I don't think that's something you want to do every year. At Loyola Chicago, he was known for having great defensive teams, and he's going to need to find a way to do that again here at Oklahoma. That's the thing that he's going to need to do to compete in this SEC. I feel like it's kind of a wash going from the Big 12 to the SEC. These, to me, look like the two best leagues in all of college basketball. But I feel like when you're a defensive first coach, and their defensive hasn't been bad, they've had decent defenses, top 50 in KenPom every year he's been there, 38, 48, 36. I do feel like it's harder to get a bunch of new guys to come together and gel on the defensive end and buy in right away on the defensive end. And that's the challenge that he's going to have. They lose a ton from last year. And it's not exactly how I would like to enter a new league. I do think there's a bit of a learning curve. Anytime you enter a new league, you got to learn completely new teams. There's something to be said for being in a league for 10 years and being familiar and comfortable with, okay, this is a Rick Barnes team. We're familiar with how they play. They don't necessarily have that luxury at Oklahoma, and they don't have it at Texas either, who is my second team that I feel like is trending down. And Texas is an interesting situation because, 2 years ago, Rodney Terry took over midseason for Chris Beard, and they had a very talented roster. Rodney Terry was able to rally that group. He took them to an Elite Eight, and then the expectations were high going in to 2024. That was a team that I thought had all the pieces to go back to an Elite Eight, maybe to a Final Four, to contend in the Big 12, and that really just didn't materialize. They went 9-9 last year. They won a first-round game against Colorado State, lost to Tennessee in the second round, and they were just, they felt like an inconsistent team all season long. And they had signed some big names out of the transfer portal in Max Asemus, in Caden Shedrick. They added them to some big names like Dylan Dessou, Tyrese Hunter, Dylan Mitchell. It looked like a team that had everything you could want. And they, it just didn't materialize. They were maddeningly inconsistent a season ago. And now you look at what they have coming up in 2025, and they lose a lot of those guys that were a part of that Elite Eight team a couple years ago. And they have a good recruiting class. They bring in a five-star guard in Trey Johnson. He is a guy who's like in the top five or top 10, no matter where you look, a 6'6 guy. And, you know, he's a guy that the people I trust, that I read, expect to be a contributor right away. But you just wonder, with losing so much of the core of that team that was really good 2 years ago, is Texas going to be able to replace all of it? I thought Dylan Dessou was the most important player in the Big 12 a season ago, because when he was healthy, I thought he turned Texas into a completely different team. And he's gone. Dylan Mitchell is gone. Tyrese Hunter is gone. Brock Cunningham is gone. Max Asemus was not part of that team, but he was their lead guard last year, and now he is gone. They do have Caden Shedrick coming back, which is a nice piece. They went out and they got a bunch of transfers, a couple from Indiana State. They got Tremon Mark, that SEC fans will be familiar with, from Arkansas. But it just feels like this is a big year for Rodney Terry in kind of righting the ship and, making his mark to say, okay, yeah, I inherited this team with talent. I guided the ship. It went well. Last season was what we wanted, but we're going to right the ship here. But it just feels like losing all those pieces from that core from 2 years ago is a big loss. Again, especially as you adjust to a new league. My last team that I feel like is trending down here is South Carolina. And it's in part because they had such a wonderful 2024. Lamont Paris has done an unreal job since he got to Columbia. When he took over that program in ahead of the 2023 season, they were in bad shape. In his first year there, they went 11-21, 4-14 in the league. They finished 221st in KenPom. Last year, they were part of that four-way tie for second in the league. They went 13-5 in the league. They got a sixth seed. They made the NCAA tournament for the first time since 2017. Lamont Paris was SEC Coach of the Year. He got a big-time new extension, $26 million over 6 years. And it was an awesome year in Columbia. They jumped in KenPom from 221 to number 54. And they did it by being the antithesis of a lot of these SEC teams. They played slow, and they mucked things up. They really slowed down the pace, and it worked for them. And I just think it's inevitable that they are going to take a step back this season because they lose their backcourt in Talon Cooper and Michi Johnson. Both guys were second team all SEC. They were a huge part of what made this team so successful a season ago. They also lose their big man, BJ Mack, transfer from Wofford, who made an immediate impact there at South Carolina. And losing those three guys, but especially the backcourt guys, Cooper and Johnson, I think is just going to make it inevitable that they take a step back. They replace them with Jamari Thomas, a Norfolk State transfer, and Cam Scott, a freshman, a top 50 freshman, but it's a lot to ask for those guys to immediately replace Talon Cooper and Michi Johnson. They do have a really nice piece in Colin Murray Boyles. He was all freshman SEC a year ago. He shot 61% from inside the three-point line, and he's a really nice piece to build around. They get Nick Pringle in from Alabama in the front court as well, but I just think it's inevitable when you lose guys who are the caliber of Talon Cooper and Michi Johnson, that you're going to take a step back. South Carolina is not quite there in the program building process yet where they can sustain a loss like that and expect to get back to the NCAA tournament again. So South Carolina is the third team trending down for me. Okay, I want to wrap up the show with one more thing. It's a future bet in college football. I'm really excited for this one because I'm getting ready for the season just like you are, doing my research, doing my reading, looking back at last season, looking ahead to next year, looking at the odds. And I was looking at college football playoff odds. And, you know, it's interesting now with this 12-team playoff. There's some different factors that we got to consider. And the bet that I came across was App State at 15-1 to make the college football playoff. And I'm putting a unit down on that. And let me tell you why I like that one. So the way things are going to work now is the four highest rated conference champions are guaranteed. I'm sorry, the five highest rated conference champions are guaranteed a bid to the college football playoff. So presumably that's going to be the SEC, the Big Ten, the ACC, the Big 12, and then one of the remaining conferences, right? So there is access for these group of five teams. I think that's an area that could have value because it's a market we haven't really had to think about before. It's just new. It's different. And some of the major contenders here outside of the P4 are Liberty, plus 600, 6-1 to make the college football playoff. Memphis out of the AAC, and Liberty is out of the conference, out of Conference USA. Memphis out of the American is also 6-1. Boise State, 7-1 out of the Mountain West. And you scroll and you scroll, you see Tulane, 11-1 out of the American. South Florida, 14-1 out of the American. And you get to App State at 15-1 out of the Sun Belt. And I like App State here for a bunch of reasons. So one, they return a lot on offense, an offense that was top 25 in SP Plus a season ago. They return their quarterback, veteran quarterback, Joey Aguilar. They return their top two receivers from a season ago in terms of both catches and receiving yards. And this is an offense that I think is not just going to be good for the Sun Belt. It's going to be good, period. Like I said, it was top 25 in SP Plus last year. I think it can be a top 25 offense again this season. They have something that's elite. They have an elite unit. Their defense, if there's one concern here, it's their defense. And can their defense improve? But I think this, they have an elite unit in that offense. Two, the Sun Belt is in transition. So the Sun Belt is one of the few conferences, I think the only, that still has divisions, an East and West division. App State's in the East, and in their division, JMU is going through a coaching transition. So Kurt Cignetti takes the head job at Indiana, so they're going through a little bit of a transition. Coastal Carolina is in year two of a coaching transition, now under Tim Beck. And of course, Jamie Chadwell took the Liberty job a couple years ago. So there's a lot of transition both in their division, but also on the other side, in the West. Some of the top teams there, South Alabama and Troy, are teams that have been at the top of the Sun Belt, but are going through coaching changes this season. John Summerall leaves Troy, Kane Womack leaves South Alabama, Summerall now the coach at Tulane, Womack on the staff at Alabama under new head coach there, Kalen DeBoer. There's a lot of transition in the Sun Belt at the top of the league. Going back to App State for a second, I should have mentioned this when I talked about their offense and their roster. You look at what at their transfer portal, who came in and who came out. When you look at a lot of these G5 teams, you'll see that their rosters are getting absolutely ravaged by the upper ranks of college football. Well, that's not necessarily the case with App State. App State managed to hold on to a lot of their guys. They lost 21 transfers out, but there's only one that I see who's committed to a power four school, and that's Nate Noel, their running back leading rusher a year ago, who's committed to Missouri. That's it of the 21. The rest of them are transferring laterally or down. And when you look at who they're bringing in, they brought in 16 transfers. You see guys from Auburn, Illinois, Louisville, NC State, Texas, USC, Syracuse, Virginia Tech, Florida State, South Carolina. You see guys transferring down from the Power Four ranks. To me, that is a very good sign. And finally, I love the schedule because App State gets a free roll at Clemson early in the season. If App State somehow can go to Death Valley in week two and beat Clemson, that's going to give them such a leg up on the competition in terms of getting ranked early and staying in that position. You know, ultimately at the end of this, they're going to have to be ranked higher than the Mountain West champ, Conference USA champ, American champ, and MAC champ, in addition to, we're assuming they're going to win the Sun Belt here, they're going to have to be ranked higher than those other four conference champions. And beating Clemson would be huge. Look, I'm not saying that I expect it to happen, but as we get into preview season, I am not super high on Clemson. And what program is better at pulling off shockers than App State? It's a free roll, right? It's a no lose. It either puts them in a great position with a win, and if they lost, who cares? They were supposed to lose. The other thing is they have a non-conference game against other top contender Liberty. Liberty's 6-1 to make the college ball playoff. Liberty, the heavy favorite to win Conference USA. They got Liberty at home. That's a huge statement game. They can essentially knock Liberty out by beating them, I feel like, because Liberty, I don't have Liberty's entire schedule in front of me, but the Conference USA is not nearly as strong as the Sun Belt. And I think they can essentially knock Liberty out of contention if they beat them in that game. So I like that aspect of things. And then we talked about, you know, the transition in the Sun Belt. Looking at the schedule right now, I only see one Sun Belt game, and that would be at Louisiana in mid-October, where I think App State would be an underdog. So I think at 15-1, it's worth a shot on App State. I like what they bring back offensively. I like who they didn't lose in the transfer portal and who they bring in. I like them being the consistent force in a league that's going through transition right now in the head coaching ranks. And I like how their schedule shakes out. Give me App State at 15-1 to make the college ball playoff. I'm putting a unit down on that. That's the show for today. Man, we hit on a lot here. We did some college hoops. We did college baseball. Got a little college ball future in there. It was a ton of fun. I appreciate you listening. I will be back later this week to continue our college basketball check-in series. Next up, we'll do the Big Ten. Until next time, keep the grill hot and the cooler cold.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.